Hello, Dick. How are you?
Good, boys. How are we doing?
Yeah, really well, thank you. Let's start with all the draft fallout. And, the fallout in particular of the big story being the Atlanta Falcons at number 8 picking quarterback Michael Penix, which blew everyone, it seemed, away. What did you make of it, and what is the prevailing fallout, do you think?
Well, who would have known that my guy Michael Penix would be the biggest talk of the NFL draft? But we had a chance to speak with him actually like 10 minutes after he was drafted. And obviously he was very, very excited. But it did cause a firestorm of controversy. And it really has nothing to do with them drafting the talent of Michael Penix. I don't think anybody had a problem with Michael Penix going 8 overall. It was a little higher than most people thought he would go. I thought probably in the low to mid-teens he would go, so 8 was a little bit higher. It's the fact they gave Kirk Cousins $100 million of guaranteed money just 8 weeks ago, and then they draft his replacement 2 months later. That is the thing that people cannot reconcile. Now, what Atlanta's doing is they're simply saying, well, we've now got our quarterback for the next 15 years. We got Kirk Cousins for 2 years. We got Michael Penix beyond that, and we're going to be all good, and we don't mind a $100 million insurance policy. My question would be, well, if you knew you loved Michael Penix, then why didn't you just not sign Kirk Cousins and draft Michael Penix 8th overall? Nobody was going to take Michael Penix ahead of 8th. So I think that's the miscalculation. And our people from Atlanta tell us that it was kind of almost a last-minute decision that they loved Michael Penix so much in a visit that they had taking it to Seattle and meeting him that they decided to draft him, and they weren't keen on drafting him when they signed Kirk Cousins. So, I mean, overall, Atlanta has an excellent quarterback solution right now, for now and for years to come. The problem is it's going to cost them a lot of cap money over the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, was one of the reasons they did it also, Dick, is they had some concerns about Cousins and the injury that he got last year?
Well, there's certainly potential for that. I mean, you're not 100% guaranteed to come back after an Achilles injury. Now, Achilles injury 10 years ago was a death knell of a career. I mean, people just didn't come back from that. And now with modern medicine, it's usually a year away from the game, and then you're good to go. So, but there's definitely that worry. Now, Kirk Cousins isn't a guy that's ever going to beat you with his legs anyway. He's pretty much a pocket passer, and he still has all of his faculties to be one of the top, 8 to 10 accuracy quarterbacks in the NFL. And I think he's good enough to make Atlanta win that division. But I'll tell you what, if Kirk Cousins were to go down, Michael Penix is the best backup quarterback in the NFL to have. If he is put into that position, he is certainly more talented than any other backup quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, it was no surprise that Chicago, they took Caleb Williams as a number one pick. But were they the big winners out of the draft? Or who were the other teams that you looked at and went, geez, yeah, they've done really well?
Well, the Bears got the flash and dash, certainly. They've got Caleb Williams, and they got our guy Roman Dunze from Washington with their two top 10 picks. And that should be a combination, quarterback wide receiver combination for the next 8 to 10 years that's going to scare a lot of teams. Rome is absolutely a salt of the earth human being. You could not want a better person on your football team than Roma Dunze. And oh yeah, he's ridiculously talented as well. So the Bears got a fabulous player and a fabulous person in Roma Dunze, who we have known for a long, long time. So that's great to see him go to Chicago. I loved what the Steelers did. They got another one of my Washington Huskies in Troy Fautanu, the guy that I wanted Seattle to take in the first round. They were able to get him. Pittsburgh had a very nice draft on the lines. And then I think the Philadelphia Eagles had a really nice draft, as much as I hate to say it, because obviously they're competing with the Seahawks in the NFC. But they got their bookend corners for a long, long time to come. And I think Eagle fans should be really happy with what the Philadelphia Eagles did in the draft.
Yeah, Dick, you speak about the Eagles. I'm a big Eagles fan, sorry to say, mate. What's your have you got any insight on Quinyon Mitchell, mate, the cornerback from Toledo? There's massive raps on him.
You know, it's funny. Micah Parsons has got a YouTube channel or a podcast, and he's obviously the star defensive end linebacker for the Dallas Cowboys. And when he saw that guy go to the Eagles, he was ticked. He saw it in real time. He was hosting a show in real time. And here's a rival of the Philadelphia Eagles ticked off that his rival got Quinyon Mitchell. So that kind of tells you what this kid has thought about in the general public.
I'm sure the team that probably were just head in hands when panics went at eight were probably the Raiders. Is that fair to say, the Las Vegas Raiders, considering now in the AFC West, well, you've got Patrick Mahomes, of course, at the Chiefs, Justin Herbert at the Chargers, and Denver, who picked just before the Raiders get Bo Nix, the Oregon quarterback. So, gosh, the Raiders, how do they get out of this as far as quarterback is concerned? Although the tight end they pick's apparently a superstar, isn't he, Dick?
Yeah, no, he certainly is. You know, the Raiders are in they're in a transition phase. I mean, you're not going to go to the Super Bowl without either the best defense in the NFL and a decent quarterback, or one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. I mean, those are kind of your ways to get to the Super Bowl, and the Raiders have neither one of them right now. But you know, that's not to say that it can't flip fast. And Michael Penix certainly, I thought he would be a perfect fit for the Raiders, but they were going to be a year or two away regardless of whether they got a quarterback or not. They weren't a team that was ready to compete for 11, 12 wins and knock off the Chiefs or knock off the Chargers in that division. I mean, that division for now is a two-team race between the Chiefs and the Chargers, and it's just a question of, can Jim Harbaugh get this team winning right away, or is it going to take him a year or so? If you just look at Jim Harbaugh's history, it doesn't take him a long time to start winning big. So if it's not this year that the Chargers win the division, I mean, it's probably next year when the Chargers win the division.
How did New England fare, Dick? Because obviously Belichick left and Brady's been out of there for a couple of years, and it's always difficult to replace legends of the game. But how did they fare in this draft?
Well, you know, New England got Drake May. That's a guy that is going to be a quarterback of the future, and with pick number three. I'm not a huge fan of him, to be perfectly honest with you, but I think he's going to be suitable. I mean, I think there's a big range of where Drake May can be. I mean, he can be all the way on the top end of like a big, you know, a Justin Herbert, a big, strong pocket passer guy. And on the bottom end, guy, he could be another Zach Wilson, guys, and he could be anywhere in between. Geez. His accuracy is questionable. His arm strength's not questionable. He's got good athleticism, but his accuracy is questionable. He's going to have to hone that in. But they got a very good wide receiver in Jalen Polk, another kid from Washington. My Washington Huskies were just filling up the draft board. We had 10 of them drafted on Thursday and Friday, and Jalen Polk is an exciting target for Drake May to have.
Dick, onto the NBA playoffs. Are you still confused how the Suns got swept? How did that happen, mate? Honestly, with their roster, that was unbelievable.
Yeah, it's surprising they got swept. I thought it was going to be a good series. I thought it was going to be a competitive series. As we spoke last week, I said, you know, regardless of who wins the Clippers-Mavericks series, I don't see either one of those teams going deep in the playoffs. So that was kind of we talked about it last week being kind of a throwaway series. And to be honest, because it was such a throwaway series, I didn't watch much of it at all. I mean, my eyes have been simply on Knicks 76ers, and they've been on Lakers Nuggets. Those are the two that I have honed in on. The other ones I've kind of kept an eye on. Pacers Bucks have been entertaining, but you know, there's really nothing entertaining about the Clippers Mavericks. I mean, neither team plays particularly good defense. Both teams are aging, and you know, Kevin Durant continues to slip into this, you know, what could have been when it comes to Kevin Durant's legacy. And he has now been swept in two of the last three playoffs. And I think I looked it up yesterday. In his last 24 playoff games, 7-17, guys, in Kevin Durant's last 24 playoff games. I mean, he's been miserable, not numbers wise, but he just hasn't been able to lead anybody, whether it be Brooklyn or Phoenix, to any playoff success over the last 5 years.
Well, you mentioned the Lakers and the Nuggets, Dick. Where do we start? Do we start with, was it LeBron's last game? How did the Lakers lose some of those games in that series, and how strong mentally must the Nuggets be to just hang in there and just provide those winning baskets at the end?
Well, yeah, I think you're right when you say, how did the Lakers lose this series? Because I think it was a combination of the Lakers doing things late to lose these games and the Nuggets just having the most clutch player on the floor in Jamal Murray winning two games with jumpers. Basically identical plays, except one was going right and he hit the jumper falling into the bench, and then the other last night was going left, hitting the jumper from about 15 or 16 feet. But think about this, guys. There were five games in this series, and the Lakers led for twice as many minutes in the series than the Nuggets led for. Think about that for a second. Quarters one through three, this was a series dominated by the Los Angeles Lakers. That was the Laker team that I thought could push the Nuggets to seven games. We saw it. But then we also saw Jokic and Jamal Murray being able, and you know, the third and fourth options, you know, you've got Michael Porter Jr. hitting a huge three down the stretch. You've got Aaron Gordon coming up with huge offensive rebounds. That was the difference, guys. It was the third, fourth, and fifth options of Denver. KCP hitting a big three. Where in the Lakers' third, fourth, and fifth options were really spotty. D'Angelo Russell was not good in this series. Reeves was hot and cold in this series. The 3, 4, and 5 won the game and won the series for Denver because they played big in the fourth quarter, and you just had nobody else step up in the fourth for the Lakers.
Let's go over to the Eastern Conference. You mentioned the Knicks-Philly series. As a Knicks fan, absolutely loving it with the Knicks up 3-1, and Milwaukee with Giannis and Damian Lillard struggling for fitness, down 3-1 against Indiana. But I thought it was big yesterday, Dick, watching Kristaps Porzingis go off with what looked like a calf injury for Boston. They're 3-1 up against Miami. But I have hope that provided the Knicks get through to the conference finals, and if Porzingis is not healthy, Boston are vulnerable. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I think Boston's vulnerable. I do, especially with that injury. They're still the favorites to win it all. I don't know if they should be the favorites over Denver, although, you know, the road in the Western Conference is so brutal. I mean, look at all these teams in the Western Conference with 48, 49, 50, up there, upwards to 55 wins. You just don't have as many of those in the Eastern Conference. But the Knicks have really impressed me, guys. I thought this was going to be a closer series. Philadelphia still may be able to get one from New York, but what Jalen Brunson has been able to do is absolutely phenomenal. He's averaging almost 30 points in the series. Will Philadelphia be able to grab one? I think potentially Philadelphia will be able to grab one more, but the Knicks should win that series. And, you know, it sets up what could be a potential, you know, knockdown, drag out. I mean, if you got Knicks-Boston, what the ratings of that would be is unbelievable. And how about this for an idea? If LeBron leaves Los Angeles, how about him ending up in the Big Apple with an already championship caliber New York Knicks team? How would that be for New York? How would that be for LeBron James's legacy? Because, you know, nobody in the major four sports in America has ever won championships with four different franchises in any sport. LeBron could be the first one, and he could do it in New York. What do you think for that? What do you think about that idea?
Do you reckon that's what's driving him, Dick, to win four championships with four different sides?
I think Michael Jordan's driving him. I really do. Yeah, sure. I think there's two things driving him: Michael Jordan and his desire to play somewhere with his son. I think those are the two things that are keeping LeBron James healthy, strong, and being able to put up the ridiculous numbers that he does every single night at the age of 39. Wow. He's trying to chase his heirness. And if he wanted, what would cement the legacy of a GOAT more than winning four championships with four different teams? He'd have five overall, then he'd be one shy of Jordan, and he'd win one in New York. That would be unbelievable.
Does that close out the conversation of the GOAT, Dick, if he does that in New York?
Oh, for me it does. But I'm already a hairline away from LeBron and Michael Jordan. There's a lot of people that just dislike LeBron so much that LeBron could win 10 championships and they still would. I mean, they're just so close-minded to the fact that they think Jordan's the GOAT and nothing can touch him, that there are certain people that will never change their mind no matter what LeBron James does.
Dick, I'm hearing some good stories from the boys from Adelaide, the Live Golf. Loz had a couple of good ones for me. Did you catch the second installment of the tournament, mate?
I didn't catch it. It's very hard to get in the States. It's not very publicized, although I'm a healthy follower of golf Twitter, and it probably was the most highly regarded Live tournament that I can think of. I mean, I hear the crowds were absolutely phenomenal, and it was a really, really healthy event. So good on you guys over there in Adelaide for what was a fantastic event. And it came at a perfect time, too, because, you know, really the PGA Tour, it was almost a bye week, you know, because they play that partner tournament, the Zurich Classic. The only thing the PGA had going for it was the fact that Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry, two big names, were able to make it to the final and win in a playoff. So that was really the only thing. But other than that, you know, the stars were definitely in Adelaide.
Have you got any fancies for the CJ Cup, Byron Nelson, at all?
Yeah, guys, I haven't narrowed down my list yet. It's a list. It's a tournament without really much fanfare or superstars. Will Zalatoris is already pulled out. Jordan Spieth is your lone, you know, big name in his prime. You do have those couple Aussies, though, that I think are live this week. Last year's champion in Jason Day, and of course, Adam Scott, Minwoo Lee. I think this could be a great week for the Aussies. And I'll give you one more name. Benny Ann is due to win a PGA tournament. I mean, he really is. He is a fabulous ball striker. He hits tall, you know, high, majestic drives. He is going to be fun to watch. So there's my short list for you right there.
Love it. Thanks so much, mate. Have a great week.
See you, boys.